Welcome to Lost and Found, a radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Westside. We're currently going through the book of Mark with Pastor Dave. In today's study, Pastor Dave takes us through Mark chapter 14, starting in verse 32, ending in verse 52. In today's study, we see the scene of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, right as Judas was betraying him. Through the Gospel of Mark, we get a glimpse of Jesus, the second Adam, overcoming sin, submitting to his Father's will in the garden, and getting ready to save all of mankind. More on that now. Let's pick up with Pastor Dave in Mark chapter 14, verse 32.
There's just a really cool part that John tells us that I just want to tell you about the captain of your salvation. He said, when they came, "Whom do you seek?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he said, "I am." King James renders it, the translation, "I am he," but the "he's" in italics, it was never there. It's "ego emi." It's the same response to this group of military, to this militia, as it was to Moses in the burning bush when he said, "Who do I say sent me?" He said, "I am. I am the self-existing, all-eternal God that's always been. That's who I am." These guys come and they say, "We are seeking Jesus of Nazareth." And Jesus goes like this, "I am." And then it tells in John that they all fell backwards. So let's be conservative and just say 200. Imagine 200 soldiers and their swords and their clubs and their torches, all of them falling down. Crazy part, they get back up and they do it again. They get back up and he says, "Who are you seeking?" And again, he said, they say, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he says it again, "I am." And there's this ruckus that breaks out there when this all is being revealed, as this is all happening. And that's what leads us to verse 47, when it tells us there must have been like this turning and running away from this scene. Like there's this like fight that's about to break out. They think Jesus is right there. He's like, he's submitting himself to this. He's in complete control. But this one here that's about to get cut by the sword, it's as though he turns, because it tells us in Luke which side this happens to him on. It says, "And one of them that stood by," and listen, Mark is buddies with John. He's influencing the tone here. So he's the one who it's about. So he's going like this, "Mark, something really embarrassing is going to happen to you in verse 52. So you don't got to name you if you don't name me here." You see what I'm saying? Because in this instance, Peter's not named. One of them is. But you know who threw him under the bus, don't you? John, the one who beat him to the resurrection tomb on Resurrection Sunday, right? Exactly. They raced each other to the tomb. There was some type of like, that these two, y'all, you can smile a little bit. Come on, like this is a tough thing up here trying to help you through this. These two had some type of, it's like a sibling rivalry. They were just, John was the young one of the group. Peter was the old one of the group. I think that Chosen did a pretty good job with the character of Peter. I think I kind of like him. I think it's being depicted well so far. Peter's a tough guy. He's outspoken. He's ambiguous. He's just, you know, he's whatever. And John's a lover. He likes to play that role to Jesus, that cutesy role. At least that's how I see it earlier on in life. I'm not trying to mess with John the Revelator, though. Later on, he's got this voice of thunder, and he endures some hardship. So, but in this scene here, these guys kind of seem to go back and forth. And John throws him under the bus. He goes, "I'll tell you who it was. It was Peter." Peter cuts his ear. He's the one who got crazy here. And Peter's delirious. Can't you picture that? I mean, really, though, can't you? Like, he's waking up from his sleep. He's wiping the crust. Maybe he fell asleep three times. Maybe he just entered into REM sleep. Lord woke him up. Judas is there kissing him. He's probably trying, "Oh, my gosh, it's been Judas this whole time." Maybe he's looking at John. Maybe he's looking at James there, and he's saying, "I cannot believe that this is who it's been this whole time. This is insane here. I can't believe he just kissed the Lord." He's responding as quickly as he can. He takes his sword. Clearly not a swordsman. He's a fisherman. You know he wasn't trying to cut his ear off. He was trying to obviously decapitate this soldier. Luke, the doctor, is interested in what ear it would be, so he's the only one who tells us it's the right ear, which makes me think that his name, which is Malchus, we also get that from the other Gospels, he probably was turning from Jesus in this situation, and Peter just hacked, probably right-handed, and just he got his ear, clean cut, got his ear. He was probably blown away. Whoa, what did I just do? You know, because I don't think even if he were trying to do that, he could do that. It'd be even more impressive. But he takes his sword. He chops off the ear of Malchus, the servant of the high priest, high ranking, maybe the most high ranking officer that was there. He cuts it off. And we know from the other Gospels that Jesus rebukes that, takes his ear. And it's the last miracle that he performs before the cross, and he puts it back. Covering up, his last miracle is covering up one of the blunders of his own. He said, you're gonna fail, Peter, but it's not ultimate failure. This isn't like you had a faith crisis and you're going to switch gods. Some of you just need to hear that tonight. You've just been failing for a decade. It is your first time back. I don't know who I'm preaching to tonight. It just feels different in here, so I'm going to go with this. There's been failure, spiritually speaking, after failure that defines you. And here you are tonight. And the Lord would say to you, your faith wasn't utter failure. Like, you didn't switch gods. You're not a pagan. Like, you just got stuck in the muck. You just fell into some things. But don't you worry, this whole lesson tonight is about me going to the cross so that you can be fully forgiven and eradicated from your sins. So that's what Jesus was doing moments before the cross, and that's what Jesus has been doing ever since. Taking our messes and doing something miraculous, that's what he does. He restores and he redeems. That's what he does. He restores and he redeems. That's important for our kids to know. That's important for you to know. We need to teach grace, or else we've missed the whole thing here. We gotta give out grace. Grace received is grace extended, right? That's what we're saved by. That's what we're kept by. That's what we gotta give out to other people. People have to experience the grace of God to fully buy in to the message of Christianity. If there is no grace that washes over the whole message, we got nothing. So here's the last miracle of Jesus, fixing the blunder of one of his own. And it was because he wasn't listening. It's because he wasn't listening to the words that Jesus said. He said, I need you to watch me lest you enter into temptation. You don't even know what we're on the verge of. You don't even know what we're up against. You don't even know what's coming. You better watch. You better pray. They ignored it. They ignored it. They ignored it. Listen, I wrote something down in my Bible that I'm going to give to you, and I'm maybe going to ask you to write it down or at least contemplate it. And here's a point of application from this scene. I believe that sometimes Jesus is... I don't know if this makes sense, but this is the way that I wrote it. I believe that sometimes Jesus is putting my ear back on the right way, and he's teaching me to hear what I've not been hearing that I should have been hearing when he's speaking to me. You know, Lord, I look at this thing here, and I think it's interesting that it's an ear, given the circumstances, right? Like, that's kind of interesting. It's ironic. Lord, I'm asking you, as it were, to take my ears spiritually and like put them into place. How did he do it when he put it back on Malchus? Did he gently? I mean, Malchus was probably like terrified, stunned, in shock between the blood flow and the pain and then just like him being so tender. How did he do it? Did he sort of turn his chin and let me line this up just perfect? Okay, let's put that back right there. Pop it back in. Like Mr. Potato Head. You know, I don't know how the thing went there, but I think to myself, this is just something I never got before from the Lord in the text. Like, this is new. This is new manna for me. Lord, the thing for me is I've become so familiar with you and your word, and it's been tough because I get to places in your word now. I'm speaking to you guys about my own life. I get places in your word now, Lord, where I already know what it's going to say before I read it, and I hate it. And I just got to say, Lord, I need you to like realign my ears. And I need you to teach me to hear what you've been saying that I've not been hearing that I should be hearing so I can do what it is that you want me to do. Y'all came here for something new tonight. And the Lord might be saying back to the most of us, or at least to some of us, you don't need something new. You just need to let it drip what you've already been hearing, but now you need to hear it with consecrated ears. Now you need to hear it with ears that are yielded and open to me, so I can let you hear my voice in such a way that you do actually what it is that I want you to do. Wild. Last miracle. Him fixing his ear. I think Malchus gets saved, just so y'all know. If you go on and read the book of Acts, a ton of these guys got saved. I think he's one of them. I don't know how you don't get saved after that. I don't know, though. There's people all the time that Jesus does crazy things for, and they still don't come to Christ. But this is pretty wild. I just am picturing Peter right now. Why are you fixing his ear? I just did that. I was going to take it with me. Like David when he took Goliath's head, you know. Jesus answers and he says, are you come out? Verse 48, we're getting ready to close. Did you guys come out as against me as like a thief? That's speaking of like a nighttime robber. Like you do dirty things at night. You jump people at night. You got a crew. Is that what you look at me as? Like a robber? Like a nighttime thief? Like a Jesse James? Like what is this here? With swords and with staves to take me? I was daily with you in the temple when the sun was shining. Man, I was out in the open teaching and you didn't take me not. You took me not. And it's all because he says in finality there, and we need to see this too, is so that the scriptures might be fulfilled. Listen, he's not looking for like a dismissal here. I don't want you to read this wrong. He's not going like this. He's not looking for like a statement of release here. Like, guys, why are you trying to take me? Like, I'm not a robber. I'm not a thief. I'm not what you thought I was. Why'd you come with swords? He's challenging them. He's asking them, like, contemplate what you're doing. I'm right here. For goodness sakes, your lead man, I just fixed his ear. I could have left him like that. That could have been like a distraction as you helped him. He's gushing in blood. My guys could have started chopping heads in. And in the other gospels, it tells us I could have called down a legion of angels. Y'all know what a legion of angels is. A legion of angels is 12,000. He's not going to call down 12 legions of angels. What is that? That's like 72,000 angels. We know that only one angel in one night destroyed 185,000 Assyrians. And that wasn't even like the archangel. That could have just been like Kurt or something, the angel. Some random angel who just killed 185,000. We don't even know who his name is. He's just so bad to the bone that he destroyed 185,000. There's maybe 200. Fine. We'll say a cohort was 600,000. There's 1,000 of you. Whatever. It's nothing. I could have called 12 legion of angels. He's challenging them. What do you got swords in your hands for? You got batons. You got these like these weapons here of destruction. You don't even need them. I'm right here. I've been right here. The reason why you're doing it now is because in a few hours it's Passover, and I am the Lamb of God who has come to take away the sins of the world. So I got to die on Passover. You know you're not. None of this is in your control. Like, yeah, there was a battle in the garden. None of you get it twisted here tonight, though. It was just I had to resolve it in my humanness that I was going to the cross, that there was no other way, but that's settled. That's a great place to be when something's just settled before the Lord. It's just settled. I'm not double-minded. I'm not unstable. I'm settled. I got it. This is what I'm doing. I'm going. There's nothing that's stopping me now. I've already resolved it. The blood already started, you know, coming from my pores. It's already started oozing from me, this redemptive blood. It's happening. You didn't need to do it, but what he's doing here is he's challenging them. Why are you doing what you're doing? And listen, some of you need to like let that question be your question tonight. Why are you doing what you're doing? What are you kicking against? Like Saul, why are you persecuting me? Why are you kicking against the goat? It's hard for you. Why are you doing that? Why are you stiff-arming me? Why are you resisting me? Why are you opposed to me in my ways? Like, I'm not even saying like why, like pathetically, like why? You know, I'm saying it like seriously, like ask yourself, what are you even doing? And then it tells us in verse 50 that they all forsook him and fled. Doesn't that hurt? He's alone. And we close here with this. And there followed him a certain young man. Remember the deal I told you about with Peter? You don't mention me, and I won't make you write your name right here. Because I believe that this is autobiographical. I believe that this is the man who wrote the gospel. This is Mark. Who's just a young boy Scholars believe that it was actually his parents' house where the Last Supper meal was had. Scholars believe, early theologians, shortly after the time of Christ, say that how this scene went, real quick, well, I'll read the verse to you, because you don't get to read many verses like this very often. And then there's actually application. A certain young man, having a linen cloth cast about his naked body, the young man laid hold on him, and he left the linen cloth, and he fled from them naked. And he runs home. I think he's speaking about himself, because as it goes, as it's told, the Last Supper meal was in the upper room of his parents' house. Judas last sees Jesus there. He leaves to go get the guards, the soldiers, the Sanhedrin, for the arrest of Jesus, and he brings them back to Mark's house. Mark's parents would have answered the door. This is just what they say. So if you don't like it, they said it. And he probably, scholars believe that he was probably around the age of 12, 13, maybe lurking around the corner, watching the commotion. He sees mom and dad, say, Jesus is not here. He left. We know from the other gospels, Judas knew that Jesus loved the Garden of Gethsemane. And perhaps Judas said to the soldiers, don't worry, I know where he is. He's probably right across the Kidron, over in the Mount of Olives. And perhaps he took his robe, man of like passions with me, put on that robe and wanted to flee to Jesus to give Jesus the heads up, they're coming for you. And then by the time he got there, it was too late. It was already happening. So there he is in this scene of embarrassment and disgrace because he too flees. And they grab his robe and he runs home naked. And I think that that's why Mark and Peter were such tight buddies. That, and because Paul says he's useless to me. I brought him on a missionary trip and he's a crybaby. Sent him home to his mother. Seriously, that's who this is. And Peter adopts him as his own, spiritually speaking. And later on, Paul and him would be buddies too. And he'd say, send John Mark to me. I've learned that he actually is profitable for the ministry. Because I guess the Lord would have me say this in closing. I never know how it's going to close. I never have a closing prepared. He'll never let failure have its final say over his kids. Never. Isn't that amazing? Even to the very end, he says to Judas, friend, would you call your betrayer friend in that moment? I'd be like, sick 'em, boys. I know it's so bad, but I'm just telling you the truth. I'd say sick 'em. I just want to say so unworthily that I feel flooded with the love of God for you right now. Not from me for you, from him for you. And so overwhelmed with this crazy strong impression that I'm to say on behalf of him, that he loves you so thoroughly, so completely, that there's nothing that you could draw up in your mind that could ever even affect the amount of love that he has for you. It's over the top. Let him woo you. Let him heal your broken heart, your disappointments, your letdowns. Let him personalize it. Just accept it. He's in this place speaking to you through his word. Friend. All of us, we never say to somebody who would go against us and hurt us, you know, friend. But he says, friend. Where were you? And it's like when he cries out, it's the same voice, it's the same tone as when he cries out in the Garden of Eden. He says to Adam, Adam, you know, where are you? Just so that there can be confession, God, I messed up. So I was ashamed. So I hid myself because I was naked. And I just didn't want you to see me like this. And it's like the Lord puts his hand over Adam's mouth and he would have maybe put his hand over Judas's mouth, and he's definitely put it over my mouth, and says, no, enough of that. kill the fatted calf, get the signet ring, get the robes, the best, finest robes, clothe my boy, my daughter, they're back. That which was dead is alive. That which is lost is found. I've got it, you're covered. Your faith wasn't failing faith. Like, you failed in your faith, but it wasn't failing faith. You're still my friend. It's just too overwhelming for me. I can't even get my mind. I feel so unworthy to be the one who's expressing it. But there's people in this room, for their own good, they got to respond. So just stand. Just stand. Like, right now to Jesus. Not to me, not to people, just to him. All you're doing in standing, you're just responding to him. You just stand. Let him just extend his love to you. If there's like one or two that are near these people that are standing, would you now stand and put your hand on their shoulder as just an extension of God's love? I'm going to start praying. This is so real and it's tangible, the presence of God, what he wants to do. Jesus, I right now, in this closing moment of this service, I pray for every person that just popped out of their seat. This message is their own, Lord. They need this expression of your love. They need this expression of your forgiveness, your embrace, your acceptance. Lord, I pray that you would right now, in this moment, God, wrap your arms of love around them and speak, Lord, melodies and songs to their hearts. Turn their mourning into dancing. Lord, take their garments of sorrow into straw, and Lord, replace them with garments of praise. I pray that the joy, Jesus, that you give would be testimony to them of your faithfulness, that you'd flood their hearts with joy that is otherworldly, that comes from your presence, and that, Lord, you would grace them with the ability to put one foot in front of the other in their pursuit of you and their walk with you. Heal them, God, whatever stumbled them, whatever is hurt them, whatever has discouraged them, misled them, whatever has been abusive in their life, Lord. All these things, Lord, are not beyond your touch. The same touch of you, our Master, who took the enemy's ear and put it back.
That concludes our message for today here on Lost and Found. Join us next time as we continue our verse-by-verse study through God's Word. We invite you to join us this coming Sunday at Calvary Chapel Westside. Our Sunday morning services are 9 and 11 a.m. We'd also love for you to refuel with us at our midweek study on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Calvary Chapel Westside is located at 2407 Union Street in Spencerport, New York. If you'd like to know more about CC Westside, you can log on to our website at ccwestside.com. That's ccwestside.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Vimeo, where you can access videos of Pastor Dave's teachings. If you'd like to contact us, simply give us a call. Our phone number is 585-352-3150. Again, that's 585-352-3150. Thank you for listening to Lost and Found, a radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Westside. Join us next time as we continue our study through God's Word. Luke 19:10 says, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost." It is our prayer that you have found the only pathway that leads to an abundant life, found only in Jesus Christ.